right, welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Justice Dofano to my right and I are glad to have visiting with us former Justice Bill Brigham. He's not a stranger in our court at now or previously. We have two cases set on our 9 o'clock docket. We will hear both of those before we take a short recess to hear our third case, which is on the 10:30 docket. If the clerk will please announce counsel who will be arguing today. All right, Mr. McClain.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I represent Aston Meadows, purchaser of 182 acres of land that is located wholly in Tarrant County, along with some subsequent purchasers, Ms. Kathy Ivey and others. Let me briefly go through the background facts. Aston Meadows bought 182 acres of land that is wholly in Tarrant County on March 28, 2001. At that time, there was no indication of any oil or gas leasing activity on the property. They had the title searched by a title company, and there were no documents of record in Tarrant County that indicated that the minerals had been severed or leased or anything of that nature.
But excuse me, wasn't there a reservation in the original deed from the Wilsons to Aston Meadows that excluded any recorded easements, reservations, mineral reservations, and it specifically says leases?
There's in the deed to Aston Meadows, there's the general language that says that the conveyance is made subject to matters of record, including reservations and leases, but it did not point out a specific oil and gas lease was in effect or filed of record in Tarrant County.
So your position is that the notice contained within the deed itself is insufficient to put you on inquiry?
Yes, I am. Inquiry notice requires that you have a description or recital of fact or reference to another document, that something in fact exists, not a catch-all reservation that says if there's a lease, then it's taken subject to that lease.
Okay.
There was nothing on file in the deed records or in the conveyance documents associated with the transaction that indicated that a lease was in fact in place or that existed. There was, in fact, in connection with the closing, a 1970. In fact, I handed to the clerk this morning some color copies of exhibits that are in the record, and it may be beneficial to view those. They're court record 192 and 193. Let me draw your attention first to court record 192, and you will see here a couple of things depicted. All of the colored acreage, the yellow and green, is the acreage that is subject to the 1977 lease, which is the lease at issue in this case.
For us, is that Exhibit C? These are marked Exhibits B and C as opposed to the other number.
Yes, Exhibit B is the one that I'm looking at.
Okay.
And you'll see the Wise and Tarrant County line. You'll see a perimeter in red, which is the 182 acres that was acquired by Aston Meadows, wholly in Tarrant County. And you'll see the intersection terminus point between the two graded areas that we'll talk about later. So this is the acreage that is subject to the 1977 lease. The other exhibit that's marked Exhibit C, court record 193, shows all of that 1977 lease acreage in green, and then the acreage in yellow was subject to a 1979 lease. And I want to talk about that briefly because that lease was found because it was filed in the Tarrant County deed records, and the sellers executed an affidavit of non-production indicating that that lease had expired on its own terms for lack of production. I didn't want those two leases to be confused. After Aston Meadows acquired the 182 acres, they platted it and began selling off lots. One of the lots was sold to Kathy Ivey, who purchased it before Devon filed the 1977 lease in Tarrant County. So we've got Aston Meadows in the original acquisition of the 182 acres, and then Kathy Ivey, both of which acquired their land before the 1977 lease was filed in Tarrant County. The other plaintiffs all acquired their lots after the 1977 lease was filed of record in Tarrant County. So let me talk about Devon's position. Devin is the successor in interest to the 1977 lease. Back in 1977, it was filed in Wise County. It was not filed in Tarrant County. It covers multiple tracts. You've seen that on the exhibit that are multi-county tracts. Devin recorded the lease in Tarrant County on April 26, 2002, after Aston Meadows had acquired the property and after Kathy Ivey had acquired her lot. Interestingly enough, if Devin's position in this case is correct, there would be no need for them to file that lease in Tarrant County. They did so because they knew they needed to cure the defect of the record in Tarrant County before they filed their declaration of pool for the Jack Wilson gas unit that they put together and began production on. There are two wells at issue. The Jack 5 well is a horizontal well. The well site is not on the 182 acres, but it's a horizontal well, and it traverses under the 182 acres, including Kathy Ivey's lot. It actually goes right under her lot. There is another well, the Jack 2 well. It is a vertical well. It is within 330 feet, it's actually 200 and some odd feet, from the northern boundary of the 182 acres. And so it's an issue because if the 1977 lease is determined to be void, then the number 2 well, consequently, is an illegal well. It's too close to the lease line. The question in the case is, why should Aston and Ivy be bound by the 1977 lease? They have to take up the issues of constructive notice and inquiry notice. Constructive notice obviously means you can be bound by a document on file whether you know about it or not. And the question becomes, where should the 1977 lease have been filed? It was never properly filed in Tarrant County as to the Tarrant County property alone. And we're going to talk about why. Inquiry notice simply means that if you have a description or recital of fact or reference to another document that indicates that another document exists, then you have a duty to go inquire until you find it and are charged with knowledge of what is in that document. When you boil down all of Devin's arguments, it comes down to this fact, including all of the documents that they point to that they say were on file in the Tarrant County deed records that might give rise to inquiry notice. It comes down to this fact. They argue that because the 182 acres was once a part of a larger multi-county tract, that mere fact alone obligates you to go look into the other county to see if there's any document on file that would affect title to the land you're acquiring. That's it. All the documents that they refer to, the old declaration of pool that they'll talk about this morning, lend them to that argument that if you'd have found those documents, you would have known that the 182 acres was once a part of a larger multi-county tract, and therefore you're obligated to go into Wise County and search those deeds records as well. And we contend that's incorrect. Whether you're analyzing it from a constructive notice standpoint or an inquiry notice standpoint, our position is that's not correct. You are entitled to rely on the deed records in Tarrant County when you are buying property that's solely located in Tarrant County.
But aren't you also charged with knowledge of anything in your chain of title? And so their theory is based on the fact that the older deed did reference property contained within Wise and Tarrant County. In other words, that is in Aston's chain of title.
What the older deed referenced is the mere fact that the Tarrant County property was once a part of a larger multi-county tract. There was nothing in the chain of title that indicated that the lease existed. And that's the distinction I'm drawing. There's nothing unique about the fact that if you're buying a piece of property in Tarrant County, if you go back in the chain of title, I don't want to say this is for every single lot you buy, but odds are at some point between today and the original patent grants, it was a part of a larger ranch, part of a larger multi-county ranch. So when you go up the chain, you're going to hit some point where you're put on notice that your piece of property was once a part of a larger multi-county tract. Does that mere fact alone obligate you to either go look in the other counties, or does it also put you on constructive notice of whatever was on file in the other counties? That's the issue. It's not that there was something in the chain of title that said there's a lease in effect. That's the distinction, because in this case there wasn't. The When we go look at the authority in the case law to try to resolve this issue, there's not much. Despite Mr. Keltner's assertion in the briefing that there's 125 years of case law that we're ignoring, there's actually, I think, nothing in the last century, and there's only one or two possible cases that even speak to the issue. And so let me jump into those, and then we have a statute, the recording statute. Let me start with the recording statute. And this is section 1101A, it provides, to be effectively recorded, an instrument relating to real property must be eligible for recording and must be recorded in the county in which a part of the property is located. Now let me stop there. Plain reading of that statute says it's got to be recorded in the county in which a part of the property is located. If you've got a part of the property in Wise County, you've got to file it there. If you've got a part of the property in Tarrant County, you've got to file it there. That's what it says. Plain reading of that statute. The Hancock case, Supreme Court, cited by both sides in favor of each side's position, is a 1885 case. And it's a case that dealt with a deed that was filed in Harris County that covered all kinds of tracts in settlement of an estate. So it had separate tracts that were single county tracts, had multiple county tracts. And the Supreme Court wrote on this, and here's what they said. First, they addressed the issue of separate distinct tracts that are single county tracts. And they say that we do not think, however, that the registration of a deed or other instrument which affects the title to several separate or distinct tracts of land situated in different counties in a county in which some of the tracts may be situated would be such registration as would operate as notice of the deed or other instrument insofar as the same might embrace lands not situated in the county in which registration is made. So they made it clear that if you've got a deed and you've got multiple individual separate tracts, you've got to file it in each county where each individual tract is located. Then they say, if, however, such deed or instrument affects the title to land in one tract, but partly in two or more counties. So here we've got one tract that's a multi-county tract. Then they say, registration in either county would be noticed for persons are presumed to know in what county lands in which they propose to deal are situated. And if situated in two or more, it becomes their duty to examine the registry of every county in which registration of a deed or other instrument affecting title to the particular tract of land may, under the law, be made. Now, here's the issue in this case. We have to balance the duty of one acquiring land, a prospective buyer, and the obligation of someone trying to protect their interest in land. Where do they go file to put the world on notice that they claim an interest? Here, the Supreme Court focuses on the buyer. Notice the language. For persons are presumed to know in what county lands in which they propose to deal are situated. That's the buyer going to look. Where do I have to go look to find out what documents may encumber my title? That's what they're focusing on. And they say if you're buying a multi-county tract, you're charged with notice of what's on file in either of the two counties. And that makes total sense because you're buying a multi-county tract. You're presumed to know that it's in both counties. You have to search both counties. Hancock does not deal with the situation where you had a multi-county tract and somebody filed a lease only in one county, and then later that multi-county tract is subdivided and the buyer's only buying a piece of property in the single county. It's not dealt with in Hancock. What is expressed in Hancock is that you are to go look in the deed records in the county where the land you propose to deal is situated. In this case, that's Tarrant County, and that's where Aston Meadows and Ivy looked. Hancock was really a case focused on a rule of evidence, the admissibility of a deed, but it did have that holding in the case. I want to point out that following that, in addressing the rule of evidence, the Supreme Court did make this notation. There cannot be a rule of evidence in force in this state which makes a deed evidence of title in one county and not in another, except as title may be affected by the question of notice. I believe the Supreme Court recognized that while you might have a deed that was properly recorded in one county and therefore it's admissible into evidence in every court in every county in the state, it has to be that way, that you could have a situation where title is affected for lack of notice. And I believe that's why they put that sentence in the Hancock case. Now, we have Pustajovsky, if I've pronounced that right, which is a 1935 Supreme Court opinion. I think it's the youngest opinion that we're going to talk about either side today on these points. And it's a BFP case. And it says, in examining the purchaser's duty to determine the status of title, Texas courts have held that the recordation rule fosters the security of land titles by allowing persons to rely on the apparent status of title as it appears from the real property registry of the county where the property is located. This is important because this is the bona fide purchaser case. Obviously, that's our position, that Aston Meadows and Kathy Ivey are bona fide purchasers, and they take without the encumbrance of the lease. But the Supreme Court says the real property registry of the county, so we're talking about the rules associated with where do you go file your instrument, okay, are set up in order to allow persons to rely on the apparent status of title as it appears from the real property registry of the county where the property is located. That's Tarrant County in this case.
Your time is up, Mr. McClain.
All right. I obviously didn't notice the lights. I apologize.
You'll have your rebuttal in a moment. All right, Mr. Keltner.
Thank you, Your Honor. If it pleases the court, I'm going to address several things, and I'm going to sort of pick up where Mr. McClain was in discussions of the cases. We do rely on Hancock as well, but before I do, I'm going to go into several other things. I want to tell you some of the undisputed facts. This is a summary judgment case. I'm going to demonstrate to you, I think, that by following the chain of title in Tarrant County, you would put on notice of the 1977 lease filed in Wise County, and that filing was appropriate, and I'll explain under the statutes why it was. First off, in fact, let me start with that first, because that was the first question that Justice Livingston asked. We have a handout that is in red that we handed out this morning. These are all matters that are a matter of record. We've also served it on the other side. The deed in question here is tab number 4. If you will look at that, it describes the property, and in describing the property, what the deed says is, look at Exhibit A. Exhibit A is several pages back, the next to last page in the exhibit. And what it does is describe the survey in Tarrant County and also refers to the page number and volume number of that transfer. Remember, this is the deed by which they got title. Now, what he says is, wait a minute, all we got and all we were dealing with was a piece of property solely in Tarrant County. Not true. The truth of the matter is, this was a 932-acre plot that straddled the Wise and Tarrant County line, and they were severing out of that only a portion in Tarrant County. The look back that is required by the deed records is what is important here, and the look back is what they're ignoring. If you go to volume 11964, page 683, it'll take you to what is my tab 5, also in the record. This is filed in Tarrant County, and what it says is refers to the 932 acres where, as you'll see, the warranty deed refers to both Wise and Tarrant County, but most importantly, the last paragraph, and it says that the transfer is made and accepted subject to any all conditions and restrictions, and then goes on for a while, filed of record in the offices of the county clerks of Tarrant County and Wise County. And of course, if you went to the Wise County records, you would have found what is in tab 6, the 1977 lease. So the Tarrant County records alone, regardless of all this talk about the law, would have led you to the 1977 lease that was filed in September of 1977. Again, I think it is terribly important and an operative fact here that is devastating to the plaintiff's case, and that is the truth of the matter is they were severing out of a multiple county tract into a single county parcel. They say that imposes upon them no obligation to look what happened in the multiple county tract. Texas law does not justify that. If you look at Hancock, you get the first hint of that. What Mr. McClain told you is the one passage that you don't look at deed records for other than noticed issues doesn't relate to this issue. In that case, what was happening is they were litigating the issue of property and who had title in Jasper County, not for purposes of notice, just whether the predecessor in interest actually owned it. The notice was not important because all of this was filed in Harris County, not where any part of the property in Jasper County ever was. And the truth of the matter is it appears to have been filed in a probate proceeding just listing what the testator attempted to do of transferring all the property owned, some of which was listed, some of which is not. What Hancock says when you look at it carefully is two things. First off, if it is for purposes of notice and it is a multiple county tract of land, filing in either county gives notice under the predecessor statute. And by the way, since Hancock, this statute, they claim it's 11001A, and I'm going to discuss why maybe it's not, but it has been amended six times by the Texas legislature, six, since Hancock, and we'll talk about the other cases as well. The legislature has not changed the meaning of the statute since Hancock, even though it has not had six opportunities to do so. And Hancock says multiple counties filing in either one is notice to the world. And it also said you have a duty buyer, and in their brief, in their reply brief, and also in their opening brief, but the reply brief, I think at page 12, they say there's no case that says they have a duty to look at that. Hancock says precisely that, and that's what you just heard Mr. McClain read. The better case, and there are two better ones, another Texas Supreme Court, which is Haynes versus West, which we'll talk about in a minute, and a case from this court demonstrate the real issue in this case. Remember, Hancock, I think, hurts them badly. They would disagree with me on that. But the real truth of the matter is what they're saying is once we sever a single county parcel from a multiple county tract, all bets are off. First, that can't be right because the recordation statutes look back, and they look back at what was filed, and that's how you tell what was good and not. So they're looking back, not forward. Remember, the severance happened in their deed when they offered to purchase only part of the multiple county tract. That's undisputedly true in this case. What happens? And this is the big question for the court, and the one that is answered by two judges, Judge Chupp and Judge Davis here, and that is this. When you have a multiple county tract and you sever out a single county parcel, does that nullify the recordation in the other county? That's really the question when you boil it down. Two courts have answered that, including this court, and this court answered it in Brown versus Lazarus. It's an old case, 1893. I don't envy you having to read it. There is, we column in the Southwestern Reporters. One paragraph is 3.5 columns. So it's an entry, and you're going to learn an awful lot about the land in that case. But the truth of the matter is, here's what happened. This was a very large tract that was located in both Wichita and Archer County. And what happened was, in Archer County, a deed of trust had been filed. Later, much later, in Wichita County, the court doesn't tell us why, but there's a foreclosure sale posted. It appears to me that it was a judgment. And it appears to be only for the Wichita County property. So they're doing the same thing the plaintiff is trying to do here, severing into a single county tract from a multi-county piece of property. And what happens is, the court says, was the recording in Archer County years before, which undisputedly the buyer at the foreclosure sale didn't know about, was that good recordation? And this court says, yes, it was, because if you have a multiple county tract, and even if you were taking something out of it only one county, recordation in either county is sufficient. If there was any doubt about that, the Supreme Court shut that door in Haynes versus West in 1907. And these are old cases, and I'll admit they're old, but they're the only cases on this issue. There are four. Both of us discussed them. There are only four that deal with this issue. Haynes is a great case. It deals with a bunch of different kinds of issues, and it's sort of an interesting history of the state if you're interested in those things. In 1858, Jefferson County was partitioned to form a part of another county, Hardin County. And unfortunately for the parties involved, the partition line between the counties ran right through the property at issue. What then happened is there was a recording in Jefferson County, a declaratory judgment that the plaintiff's predecessor in interest owned no interest in the property at all. And that was the issue. What the plaintiff did is buy just the Hardin, a section out of the Hardin County part. In other words, multiple county tract, they severed out a parcel in a single county. And he said, look, the mere fact they filed over in Jefferson County is no notice to me. I only bought in Hardin County. Same thing the plaintiff is claiming here. So, was the filing in Jefferson County enough notice and appropriate notice under the statutes? And the answer is yes, it was. That's what the Supreme Court held. Now, they dealt with a number of statutes. The one we're dealing with here is predecessor, and another one, the other side points out in their brief, that the other statute changed. That is true. But the statute involved in our case discussed there that is important did not change. There's also a suggestion that some of this had to do with creditors' interest. One thing I can tell you is there is no discussion of that in either of the cases that we are citing for you. Now, again, we have a situation where their actions sever the property into a single county interest. And what they're saying is, because I did it, I get an opportunity only to look at Tarrant County. That's not right. In their brief, they say something more than you heard Mr. McClain say today. What they say is, look, you got to look at this, and this is page 7 and 8 of their reply brief. What they say is, you got to look at this, court. You have to look at this as if it is totally from the buyer's perspective. And Mr. McClain talked about balance, but the real truth of the matter is their point is you got to look at from a buyer because of the BFP standing. Let me tell you, I think that's wrong, and I think I can demonstrate that to you as a matter of law. If you'll look at tab 3 of our handout, you'll see the BFP statute. It is 13.02 currently in the Texas Property Code. And by the way, the Texas Property Code has been amended time after time and recodified twice in recent years. In those codifications, the legislature has gone to great detail to say we don't intend substantive changes. I'll explain to you why that's important in a minute. But 13.02 simply says, if you look at tab 3, an instrument that is properly recorded in the proper county is notice to the world. So the question is it filed in the proper county? Because no one's saying there's anything wrong with the substance of it at all. If you look at tabs 1, which is 11.001A, and tab 2, 6630, those are the statutes we're dealing with. At the time of our recording, the applicable statute was actually 6630, even though their brief talks only about 11.001. Not so sure it makes a difference for the reason I just told you, that no substantive changes were included. Under those, look at it. Do you look at it from a buyer's perspective, or do you look at it from the perspective of someone recording? It is clear. You look at it from the perspective of someone that is recording. That's where the burden is. That's where the responsibility is. And that's what you look at. There is nothing in here talking about what the buyer looks at. So the question is, and I heard him say it twice, is where do you look? Where were we to look?
Well, isn't the question really, what is the meaning of 11.001A.
Yes.
Because we have to determine what the phrase in which a part of the property is located.
That is the way the plaintiff poses the issue, and that is one of the questions. I think the real issue is when you attempt to sever in from a multiple county tract into a single county parcel, what's the effect? Is recordation good? And I think that has been answered by the three cases we talked about. Lazarus from this court, Haynes versus West from the Supreme Court, and Hancock from the Supreme Court, and I think that closes the door. But finally, I would just say this. The real issue is when you look to when you hear him ask the question of where will we look, you look where it was permissible to file in the first place when the filing was made. What they're going to do, and they've used in the trial court this hypothetical, a major ranch in West Texas subsequently divided, 10 counties, they file in one county and not the other. And then they say, is that just going to be a problem forever and ever? The answer is no. Here's why. This case proves it. If you look back just like to this deed, the first deed that deals with the issue refers back to and warns you, look, you better look at the other counties. This case, remember, the predecessor deed in their case where their predecessor in interest got their title said, look at Wise County and Tarrant County, too, for encumbrances on title. That's how that is handled day in, day out, regularly by title lawyers and real estate lawyers. I think it is dangerous to change the recording statute and mess with the Supreme Court, two Supreme Court decisions and one decision from this court. It would wreak havoc on the title system, and we ask you to affirm the court's judgment.
Thank you, Mr. Keltner. Mr. McClain.
I will go much quicker this time. Let me go back to this inquiry notice issue because Mr. Keltner focused on that a good bit, and I want to make sure we draw this distinction. I mentioned it in my initial argument. And Westland is the primary case, Supreme Court, out of 1982, that talks about inquiry notice. Inquiry notice duty is created when you have a specific description or recital of fact or reference to another document. So you've got something in a document that indicates to you that another document, in fact, exists. That is different than when you simply know the mere fact that your piece of property came out of a larger multi-county tract at some point in its history. Okay? Second, Mr. Keltner is trying to say in this case, because this is the severing transaction, somehow that's distinguishable. If, in fact, that is, then Kathy Ivey should win because hers is the second generation. She bought a platted lot from Aston Meadows. There was nothing in her deed that indicated anything about her buying a subdivided piece of property out of a multi-county tract. She bought a little over 1 acre out of 182 acres that was in Tarrant County. I'm not sure that distinction gets you there. The example that I put in the brief about the Wagner Ranch I think is correct. If this court determines that you have an obligation to go up and search every county in the parent chain to the extent your property was ever part of a larger multi-county tract, if that mere fact alone obligates you to search the other counties, then you do end up in a ridiculous situation where you have the Wagner Ranch, one tract, okay, six counties, and it's subdivided, and you buy 1 acre of piece of property to put your home on. You've got to search six counties. That's where that logic leads. The on these cases,
go back and grab the old deeds and refile them every time you divide up the land.
Let me address that this way, because that's where I was headed. Where does someone file an instrument that affects title to land? Either statute that you look at, Article 6630 says, shall be recorded in the county where such real estate or a part thereof is situated. When I read that, it says you file it in every county, in both. Let's not confuse what the cases are saying when they say if you buy a multi-county tract, you're charged with knowledge of what's in both counties. That makes sense. But that's not saying that's where the recording statute says you should file. Okay, so what I'm saying is because you can say it a couple of different ways. When they filed it in Wise County, that was good filing so long as the tract remained a multi-county tract, because it was good for Wise, and if you were buying a multi-county tract, you would be charged with what's in Wise County.
But Wise County was made from, what county was Wise County made from?
Fannin.
So when there was no Wise County and it was filed in Fannin, was the obligation then to go to Fannin County, gather up all the deeds dealing with Wise County, and when Wise County was created, refile?
I think that's a different situation. The statute obligates, in fact, when you have a separation of a county into two counties, that the county collect all the deed records and file them in the new county, which is consistent with our interpretation of the obligations.
Okay.
Let me talk about these cases real quick, because I know I'm running out of time. Haynes is a multi-county tract case. Purchasers buying a tract in two counties. Brown, I believe, is also a multi-county tract case. If you read Brown carefully, and even Mr. Keltner says it appears to be only one county, but if you read Brown carefully, that execution sale appears to be for the whole tract, which was an Archer and Wichita counties. So the cases that we've got don't deal with this situation where you've got a filing as to a multi-county tract in one county, a severance, and an acquisition of a single county tract. There's not a case on point. And our position is that when you read the recording statutes, it says you've got to file it where such real estate or a part thereof is situated. File it in the county where such real estate or a part thereof is situated. It's simple. If you want to totally protect your interests, you file it in every county. If you file it in one county, that may be okay so long as the county as the tract remains a multi-county tract, but you're at risk. Now, how simple the rule is that to protect your interest in every little piece of property that you have, you file it in every county where a part of the property is located.
I have a couple of little minor follow-up questions. Can you recite to me who were the parties to the pooling agreements? Were any of the current parties involved in those agreements?
Which pooling agreement?
Wasn't there only one, or are you saying there's more than one?
Well, there was the one that was filed way back, I think, in the 70s, and nobody, no grantor-grantee was party to that,
okay.
So you wouldn't find it in the grantor-grantee index. And then the one that was done after we had acquired the property is really irrelevant because it was done after the fact, but likewise, you don't have the grantor-grantees by name in that one either.
Okay.
So you wouldn't have been able to find the pool in Tarrant County even if you looked, because you wouldn't know what names to search.
All right. Thank you, Mr. McClain. Thank you, Mr. Keltner. We appreciate your arguments today and your briefing. Your case is now submitted.